Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello again, listeners. It's another Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. It's a international break, Daily Canon Weekly Podcast, so there's not quite so much to talk about in all things Arsenal. Having said that, there is rather a lot to talk about when it comes to the Arsenal women's team. So before we get on to all the transfer tittle-tattle and smaller stories surrounding the men's team, I thought I'd invite women's expert Sylvain Jamet to come on board and tell us about what's been going on with the Arsenal ladies, because, well, the team have been performing brilliantly and going great guns, but some of the players have undergone a difficult time recently with a lot of serious injuries besetting the squad just as they hit their stride. So before I get onto that, how are you, Sylvain?
I am very well, very busy at work, but it's all good.
Oh, well, very good of you to take some time out of your busy day to speak to us. Diving straight in with the Arsenal women's team, I mean, where do you see things at the moment? Obviously, they're destroying all opponents they've experienced so far in the WSL, but can you tell us more about their performances to date?
I have to say the start of the season has been really dreamy, actually. It's been unbelievable. The league form is just brilliant. Played 8, won 8. We scored 38 goals, conceded 4, and have 6 clean sheets. And our top scorer, Anami Dima, has scored 13 as well. So it's been exceptional, and Joe Montemero has done a fantastic job. If we look at the overall performances, we actually have played 10 games with the cup games, won 10 as well, scored 50, and conceded 5. So basically, we score 5 goals a game on average and concede 0.2 per game. It's just brilliant, and there are also 7 clean sheets.
So I have to ask, what has been the cause of this big turnaround? Because obviously the last 2 or 3 seasons, Arsenal have been sort of not that convincing in terms of finishing always behind Man City and Chelsea and not looking close to winning trophies, particularly bar the equivalent of the League Cup.
What has happened this year is the coach has not been able to do a full pre-season. So he has instilled his mentality and his tactics and what he wanted to the players to do. It's also made some key signings. He's brought a new goalkeeper, the French girl Pauline Perromagnan, that I'm very pleased to interview nearly every game, and she always has interesting things to say. And also he's brought Lia Velti, the Swiss player, the defensive midfielder, who has been really in superb form so far. She has been playing as good as N'Golo Kanté, Claude Makélélé, and Andrea Pirlo together, basically. That's how good she is, and her distribution is sensational. She can see the game, she reads the game really well, and she's been crucial in her quality of play, because she does the build-up of the play, but she also breaks down the opposition attacks. So the signing have been good, the tactics have worked very well, and it's the whole team is really firing on all cylinders, actually.
So has anyone particularly stood out? I mean, obviously we're scoring lots of goals, but I mean, which players have caught the eye the most?
The scorers are really in top form. John Damnos, Viviane Benema, Kim Little, Daniel Van de Donk, Beth Mead. All the attacking players are doing very, very well. So it's a joy to watch as well. It's the old good time are coming back at Arsenal, and the fans are really happy, and we can't say much more than hoping that things will come on their way.
You alluded to sort of tactical changes that the new coach has brought in. I mean, obviously, Pedro Losada, towards the end of his reign, things went pretty south. So, I mean, what can you say about that?
If I develop also on the changes that happened between last year and this year, Joe Montemurro has also decided to try multiple systems, actually. He has still used the 4-3-3 system like he used to do last year, but he's also introduced a 3-4-3 system with a back three, adding an extra attacking player so that we can actually create more chances and dominate the opposition even more than before. When you play like smaller team or team who are trying to defend really deep, it's actually interesting to have a back three and a lot more players are on the opposition half, and you can double up on the wings with your wing back and your wingers. And also, the three center backs are attacking players as well. So we actually see one of the center backs actually going forward like Lea Williamson has done in certain games.
So what's the situation elsewhere in the league? Because obviously the women's game is quite often dominated by, well, particularly the last few years, by three or four really big teams and the rest falling by the wayside. So how are Arsenal doing in relation to the others?
So at the moment, everything is perfect. We are 6 points clear of Manchester City at the moment in the league. And the next two league games are actually crucial because we're going to play Brighton at home and Man City away in 2 weeks' time. So both games are actually live on TV because they have kickoff at 12:30 and they will be on BBC Red Button.
Now, obviously, the team's doing great and you're saying everything's rosy, but, I mean, we know that there's been a lot of serious injuries or a number of serious injuries have hit the squad, and I believe it was confirmed today that Jordan Nobbs, who's been fantastic this season, has done her cruciate. I mean, what can you tell us about that?
To be honest, everything would be rosy if we didn't have all these injuries that are really crippling the team. We have just heard a few minutes ago that Jordan Nobbs actually done her ACL. So she's going to be out for a very long time, unfortunately, and she might even miss the World Cup in France next summer. The World Cup will take place in June. So with injury coming now in November, that's December, January, February, March, April, May, June, 7 months away. It's, I think, 7 months to get back from an ACL injury is a really, really tight schedule. I think it can happen, but it's going to be tough. And it's really a shame because Jordan has been in great form this season, scoring goals, creating opportunities, running everywhere, opening spaces for the other forwards. She's been dynamic and fantastic for club and country, so it's going to be a miss for the club and England as well, and her impact is going to be really missed.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, obviously Jordan Nobbs is going to be a massive loss for the team, captain as well. And I mean, I think 9 goals from central midfield in 10 games. It's extraordinary. But I was reading somewhere that actually the ACL is the same injury that Dan Carter suffered from last season, or early this year rather, for the women's team. And apparently women footballers are 4 times as likely to get it as male footballers, which is something I'd never been aware of before. But moving on from that, of course, I mean, there are injuries throughout the squad. I mean, they're dropping like flies at the moment, and a number of them are serious injuries, aren't they?
The fact is, actually, we really have an incredible bad luck with injuries. We currently have 19 senior players and 7 players are either injured or one of them is unavailable because the latest Danish signing is only available from the 1st of January when she signs, when the transfer window opens. But for the other 6 players, they're all injured. We have 2 very long-term injuries with Daniel Carter and Victoria Schneiderbeck, who are not coming back very soon. Kim Little, who was injured by Chelsea's Drew Spence a few weeks ago, should be back around Christmas. That was the original timeline, but we might see her coming back early. But I don't know if it's... I'm just hope they don't pushing her back too quickly because... We saw that the players that just came back from injury actually had a setback. Jessica Samuelson came back and had a couple of games. She had a game with her national team as well, and now she just had a setback. She posted information on Instagram. And Tabe Hakim, who just made her debut a few weeks ago against Birmingham, is also having a setback, so we don't know when she's going to coming back as well. So we are getting really, really short of players at the moment. And it's not the best news when you're going to play Manchester City away in 2 weeks' time. Because we really hope to have 11 fit players. At the moment, we have 10 outfield players who are available and 2 goalkeepers. So I think Joe Montemiro doesn't have a big problem to select his starting 11.
So I'm presuming the fact the squad is so depleted means that what's left of the Arsenal Academy or reserve team or youth setup or whatever it is now, after so many departures the last couple of years because of young players not being able to get first team football where they could elsewhere, I presume the manager will be dipping into them. I mean, is there anyone that can step up and who should be looking out for?
Of course, we have a reserve team, it's now called the Academy team. And actually, three players got a game against Everton on Sunday. Ruby Grant, the midfielder, Paige Bailey-Gale, and Ava Koiken. Ava has been training with the first team the whole season also, even if she's only 17 at the moment. So we know that Ava is more or less ready to play first team football, but those two youngsters may find it hard to play against Manchester City, which is a team full of international players. And you can't really expect all those young girls to be performing at the highest level, like full season international, against a team like Manchester City. So it's a bit too much to ask. They can do it. They might be able to do it, but you can't really expect them to play at their best in 2 weeks' time. So it's a tough situation. And obviously, the coach had decided at the beginning of the season to have a small squad because in terms of rotation, it's a lot better when all players are concerned by playing time and they all get a game. So they all fit and ready and they can perform well whenever they're called up on the pitch. So that was working very well until those injuries started to pile up. And it's only the only problem at the moment because the team is firing on all cylinders and playing really, really well, a great attacking football.
Well, picking up on that, I mean, I was reading some things not long ago and heard a bit about the Arsenal ladies reclaiming the Arsenal brand. And I wasn't quite sure if that was the brand of the Arsenal men's team under Arsene Wenger and this sort of legacy of attacking football that was previously successful, or whether it was more a reflection of the Arsenal ladies' previous brand when they used to be obviously so, so dominant, during the era of when Kelly Smith was first starting out and people like Judy Fleeting and what have you, when the women's game in this country was possibly a little less developed and Arsenal one of the few teams really putting money in and supporting the development of the women's game.
Joe Montemurro always speak about the brand and he's clearly following the ideas made by Wenger on attacking football with ball possession, creating opportunities, finding the space. So
does that mean the Arsenal women, with their record so far, are going to be the new invincibles?
Everything is good on the football side. It's really the injury which is a main worry because had all the players been fit, we could be looking at a title this season and coming back to the Champions League for the first time since a very, very long time, actually. We have missed the Champions League and the fans have missed the Champions League as well. So let's just hope everything will stay in place and by January we'll have the new Danish standing in defence and hopefully a few more players will come back from injury and we can have a second part of the season where we can keep challenging for the title and for the cups.
Unfortunately, at this point, Sylvain's Heathrow Wi-Fi connection managed to fail him and we didn't have the opportunity to say goodbye. Having said that, I think he's given us a very good roundup of what the situation with the women's team at the moment, and we thank him for that. And of course, we all wish Jordan Nobbs, and as well as all the other injured parties, but particularly Jordan with the news today, a speedy recovery and hope that she can come back stronger and more confident and more effective than ever. And hopefully, for her sake, in time for the World Cup next year, having already missed out on large part of one major international tournament due to injury with England in the past. Moving on from the women's team, it's been relatively quiet in Arsenal world. I mean, obviously, there's been sort of lots of a little navel-gazing about the game against Wolverhampton Wanderers and people spying Arsenal players on international duty related to that. So obviously we saw Lucas Torreira putting it about for Uruguay against Brazil and leaving one on on Neymar, much to a lot of people's enjoyment. And of course, Granit Xhaka, captain in Switzerland to an unlikely 5-2 victory against Belgium, who coming into that game were slightly oddly ranked the number one team in the world. Perhaps despite his somewhat less than successful start at Monaco, Thierry Henry was really the glue that helped the held the Belgian national team together. Who knows? But either way, a great turnaround performance from Switzerland, who went 2-0 down in that game before running back to win 5-2. So whether that says more about them or more about Belgium remains to be seen. I mean, elsewhere with all the international football at the moment, with this UEFA European League title thing, whatever the hell they're calling it, this weird European tournament that no one actually understands what it means. despite and you know, a lot of people thought it was related to European qualification, which it's not. The only way it's related to European qualification is you get to be one of the most successful teams in it, then you end up having one less game in the actual European qualification next year for the benefit of having played two more games than everyone else. It strikes me as a bit odd. It can, I suppose, vaguely affect the seeding if you get good results, as these things do. And I think it does mean if you get to the semi-final or the final next summer from the group winners collection of people, then you end up being guaranteed a playoff in the European qualification. So basically, if you're a massively highly ranked team who are likely to get an easy group, the benefit of this particular tournament is if you massively balls that up, then you've still got a chance of qualifying for the tournament next year in a more difficult game than you'd probably have in your groups. So that's the Nations League for you. There were some interesting things in it. Obviously, midweek last week, Croatia came back to beat Spain 3-2 with a very dramatic and exciting game, which luckily for England was quite draining for Croatia, because then they had to come to England to play a winner-takes-all game at Wembley, where England were really, really impressive but wasteful, as they have been a couple of times in recent games, particularly with Sterling and Rashford on the wings looking very threatening. And then, predictably, Croatia, when they actually got the chance to score, were much more composed, took it very nicely and looked very dangerous on the counter. And then England, having basically stretched the Croatian defence very impressively throughout the game, then reverted back to type from the World Cup and scored two goals from set pieces late on. With Harry Kane having been utterly anonymous for the first 75 minutes, scoring one and setting up the other, which shows the value of having a striker that is effective in those situations. Elsewhere, Germany managed to get relegated from their Nations League group due to a resurgent Netherlands going from being absolute pony to now beating both Germany and France in their last couple of games, which is quite impressive. But not really a lot to affect England there. Affect England, affect Arsenal, because there aren't that many Arsenal players actually on international duty for the major teams at the moment. Ozil having retired, Koscielny's injured, obviously Torreira and Xhaka did play, Aubameyang plays for Gabon, or in this case didn't because he picked up a minor injury, Lacazette got drafted in last minute to the French squad and then pulled out because of a minor injury. And then you got Ramsey, obviously still trying to play for Wales, but bizarrely being utilised by Gibbs in a sort of deep-lying playmaker role, which just shows that Ryan Giggs perhaps needs to think a little bit more about how to set up his team. And there's not a lot else going on in terms of international players. You know, Bellerin isn't selected by the Spanish squad all that much. Socrates came through unscathed, the 1-0 victory for Greece, which is nice. I like the word unscathed in that sentence. Mustafi's out of the German team for the moment. Holding's not making it to the England squad. Monreal's injured anyway, but even then he's left back reserve for Spain behind, unsurprisingly, Jordi Alba. And then looking further up front, Mkhitaryan obviously captains Armenia and gets lots of games for them, but they were playing someone utterly atrocious that they beat 6-0, I think, away from home. I think he got a couple of assists, but that's about it. It was 6-2, I think, against... not Malta, but Gibraltar. So I think some proper part-timers scored against Armenia, which was quite amusing. But yeah, as far as international football goes, it's the usual thing of just hoping no Arsenal players get injured. I think the Nations League added a certain amount, because at least some of the games are competitive now, which makes them interesting. Actually, as I speak, Germany have gone 2-0 up against the Netherlands in the Nations League dead rubber, which won't affect that position at all, with Timo Werner and Leroy Sané. Funnily enough, now Germany are picking him, he's scoring goals for them. I don't know if this time he got another assist from Serge Gnabry, who got goal and assist for Germany. Speaking of ex-Arsenal players. But looking elsewhere in Arsenal news, there's just lots of transfer speculation. So there's a story about Miguel Almiron, who's playing for Atalanta, that won't quite die, but now apparently rather than being 11.5 million, it'd be like 26 million, which strikes me as being fuck that for a game of soldiers, if you want to put it that way, for a player that hasn't played in a stronger league than MSL, despite the fact I'd have been happy to take a punt on him on a much smaller fee. And also he's got a minor hamstring problem, which needless to say happened just after he got linked to Arsenal in true Arsenal fashion. Elsewhere, some was slightly more interesting, particularly with the impending departure of Aaron Ramsey. Reserve Barcelona midfielder Denis Suarez, who's in a sort of attacking midfielder, can play out wide, although not necessarily that quick, but a good ball player, apparently wants to leave Barcelona and fancies coming to Arsenal, basically because he's only played 90 minutes all season for them, despite the fact they paid quite a lot of money to bring him back from Sevilla. I think he'd left Barca as a youth player. And of course, when he was at Sevilla, he'd done rather well alongside a certain Unai Emery, where in that one season, he got 6 goals and 5 assists before then having an even better season. Needless to say, we are still perennially linked with Ousmane Dembele, as if somehow we've got a spare 100 million quid lying down the back of the sofa to buy an attacking player, which strikes me as totally unlikely, particularly as Barcelona seem to not want to sell him. So there we go. I don't think that one's going to run and run and run and run and run. It's probably going to run straight into a brick wall and then it disappears. There's not a lot else going on. We've been linked to an Atalanta centre-half called, I think, Mancini, no relation, who has got 4 goals in 11 games for Atalanta. He looks like a serious unit, but obviously they want quite a lot of money for him now. He's big property and all over the front pages, as well as the back pages, because in Italy they've got all their sports papers. And needless to say, Inter Milan, who he scored against at the weekend, have been linked to buying him, and Inter Milan, as their usual way, want to spend lots of money, managing to not quite be as good as any of their main rivals, and again and again and again. For Inter Milan, not quite to the same degree as before, but they're still basically the exploding clown car of top Italian footballing teams. Elsewhere, international break, Tyrese John-Jules got a couple of goals for the England under-18s against the Republic of Ireland in a comeback win, and also got a penalty against Holland in a 2-2 draw there. And I believe tonight might be playing against Belgium. So nice for him. Of course, we're supporting him because his uncle was the cat in Red Dwarf, and also because at a tender age, he's doing very well for the Arsenal under-23s this season, which we need someone following Eddie Nketiah, particularly as Eddie Nketiah looks like he's going to get games with Danny Welbeck being buggered, poor sod. Speaking of Danny Welbeck, it does look like, there are rumours around that Danny Welbeck was about to be offered a new contract by the club, and they may still do that. Of course, there's a lot of things up in the air, not to mention the seriousness of his injury, but it does seem to be the word on the street that the operation was a success, so we'll have to see how that goes. Perhaps with his injury, it would limit the interest from other parties, and maybe make the renewal of his contract at a more palatable price seem more interesting, because, I'm sure if Aaron Ramsey was prepared to renew his contract at the same price that he was currently getting paid by Arsenal, rather than wanting a significant pay rise in the light of increased wages of those who've joined the squad, then he probably would have been signed, sealed and delivered, and all of that story would have died a long time ago. Elsewhere, there's just not all that much going on. There's people talking about recalling Reece Nelson from loan. I don't think that's going to happen unless we have an epic injury crisis. And there's also been a few linking a few younger players with moves away, like Julio Plezaguelo, the young defender who made his debut this season, who's 20-odd, 21, I think, has had a couple of aborted loan spells in Spain, but apparently some Spanish teams want to buy him. And Ray Parlour seems to think that Thierry Henry would want to get Emile Smith Rowe on loan for Monaco, which strikes me as being a bit bonkers, simply because the one thing Monaco have got is a lot of young attacking midfielders. Unfortunately, all the best ones for Monaco, like Golovin and Tielemans, are both injured, which is partly why Monaco are fucking hopeless at the moment. You look at the team they put up against PSG, and you can look to compare it to their title-winning team. The only players that were still playing were Sidibe at right-back, whose form has dropped off a cliff, and Falcao at centre-forward, who's always been great if you can create chances for him. And then the rest of the team were basically a bunch of players that, unless you follow French football very closely, and particularly Monaco, you probably won't have heard of until the last few weeks, some of whom are basically straight out of the youth team. But that's what happens when you sell an entire first-team squad for all the money in the universe and replace them with some unproven and injury-prone youngsters. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to pretend there's lots else going on to talk about, lots of exciting things. But essentially, nothing has changed. We've got Bournemouth coming up at the weekend, which should be an exciting game, should be potentially a slightly scary game, given that Bournemouth are doing really well this season, only one place behind us in the table, and are particularly dangerous on the break. So we're going to have to be tactically intelligent in that game, and also hope that our shooting boots return a little, having deserted a bit in the last couple of games. Certainly we don't want any more of Aubameyang missing opening goals, as has happened a couple of times this season. I'm not going to pretend there's lots of interesting things to talk about. We've talked about the women's team, we've talked about some transfers, we've talked about international football, for God's sake. So I think before we all go insane, and you get terribly bored of listening to me talking to you on my own without, like, someone else to make me more interesting, I should knock it on the head there. But thank you for listening. If you got this far, I hope you found Sylvain's update on the women's team interesting. I certainly advise for you to go and follow the women's team if you can. They're genuinely playing really good football this season. If you don't want to watch them on the red button those upcoming games, you can of course go to Boreham Wood and watch them play live, and they're getting increasing crowds. But yeah, it's actually, the quality of football has been really fantastic, this football, and the intelligence and the interplay of the players. I mean, obviously they don't have the same physical potential as the men's team, but in terms of the skill level and the tactical intelligence, as some of the Arsenal men's team could learn a lot from some of the Arsenal women's team. There's some really two-footed players out there for a start, and as I say, sadly now injured Jordan Nobbs plays with an intelligence and a tactical awareness and an intensity which a lot of footballers all around the world could stand to learn from. Anyway, on that note, I wish you all a good week, and I wish that we beat Bournemouth, and I wish that next time I'm speaking to you, we've got some more to talk about, including a victory. All right, have a good week, everyone. Bye.